Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Francis Adarea. How's it going, Francis, man?
Yeah, I'm all good, man. How are you?
I'm very well, man. Looking forward to this one, man. It's been a long time coming. So just before we get into it, bro, just a quick one round who you are, what you do, just for anyone that hasn't come across you before, man.
Yeah, no, so Francis Adarea, in terms of like what I do, currently coaching in academy football and also non-league football. So like, I guess it's a long-winded journey and obviously a journey still to continue as well. So, but yeah, and I started off in grassroots, pretty much had the cliche footballer, aspiring footballer. I wanted to got injured and then got myself into coaching quite young. So I started.
Was that a knee injury,
I tell people it's an elbow one, but it's... But I started off with a knee injury, and I think that was sort of like the eye opener for me to get into coaching. But I also wanted to come back to football and carry on playing. But while obviously I was doing my rehab and doing physio, got into coaching, and it was through my one of my youth clubs. So again, they was linked with Millwall Community Trust, and they were offering at level ones and volunteering hours. So I got involved there, got my level one, and almost sort of like had a light bulb moment where the passion of coaching sort of sparked on from there.
So just tell me a little bit more about, you know, you mentioned there, obviously, you know, player, eventually, yeah, you know, fell into coaching. I mean, for me, my journey was very different. You know, I didn't really play like that. I wasn't really aspirational about becoming a player in that respect. But I loved football. I'm interested to know, like, why coaching? You could have gone into so many different things, but why coaching? What was it about coaching?
I think with the injury, I think I had a lot of time now being off the pitch. But I still wanted to be heavily involved. But then now I'm off the pitch. When you're in the middle of it, everything's going fast. And depending on what level you are, it gets quicker and it gets a bit more intense. But coming off the pitch, but still watching football, still looking at going to sessions where I couldn't train, but I'm looking at the game. I started to see it a bit more as a student of the game. And it is cliche, but you start to see it as the whole picture. And I think sort of like, again, I've heard this from many coach developers about the bunny eyes, about your tunnel vision. You're just looking at you and the person on the ball and probably the person around you. But now, when you're out the game, you're looking at everything going on and you see the picture a bit more wider. So I think from then sort of became more of a student of the game. I always tell people is that like the big, big sort of turning point was that Champions League game, Man United 2011 versus Barca. And I know everyone obviously picked up from Pep Guardiola and his philosophy and how he played, but I sort of fell in love with that game. And I always tell people that's one of the best games I've actually watched. Wasn't obviously seeing it live, but seeing it on TV and just seeing a bit more of the picture from what I was seeing on the field itself. Just started to see how the beauty and sort of working in an elite environment, but then it'll be how a coach can get that picture, get that philosophy, get that understanding through 11 players on the pitch at the time, all singing off the same hymn sheet and understanding how it goes. So that sort of kickboard, and I started to look more into Pep Guardiola's ideology and his methodology in terms of how football's played and how he sees the game, and almost wanted to sort of mimic it, because as you know, coaches, we go in different sort of areas, and one thing they always say, that a good coach is always also a good thief. and started to see what makes his practices and makes his game model for what it is, and started to say I wanted to build my own game model from there. So I started to get into coaching from there, volunteering. It was mainly just more sessional, more sessions, and just going in there and just having a small little practice. But then I guess the fire started to burn within me a bit more hard, more hotter. And I started to get into actually now coaching the team myself, and understanding how, trying to build a picture and understanding of how I'd like an ideal team to play, but I'm developing players alongside the way.
So how long have you been coaching now, Francis?
So I'm 30 now. I've been coaching pretty much from 15, 16.
Okay.
So yeah, it's quite a long time. Yeah.
Started early, man. You're going to be a veteran, like, soon.
Yeah, I know. No, it's catching up with me as well.
So let's talk about it, because obviously you mentioned there you're working in non-league at the moment, doing some academy stuff at the moment. Like, how'd you go from where you started to now? Like, what have been some of the pivotal moments for you? And, like, you know, what are some of the biggest messages that you've kind of, I guess, picked up along the way that's helped you kind of get to where you are now so far?
So throwing that, done my coaching badges, was doing obviously sessions for Millwall Community Trust, but then went into university. And then from there, I was doing a sports development degree, but then they'll start certain elements of how we develop sport, whether that's with NGBs or how we also work with athlete development and stuff, like understanding how the body works. From then, went into university up and done my first year in Brunel, but then went up to Northampton for my last 2 years. And that's when sort of, again, the fire was burning, because I got into grassroots coaching and started to coach a team from there. So Monday to Friday, I'm up in Northampton, and Saturday and Sunday, I'm coming down to coach football. And that was every week. So I always told people I never had that uni experience about being on the weekend and just lounging around, because I was back in London and coaching.
He was a good student.
You could say that. Obviously, I had a certain days where I probably missed out. Just the tiredness did catch up. But yeah, no, I had sort of went from coaching there and developing players and understanding how, again, like I mentioned, how a game model was. And I think at first you want to mimic what you see on the TV. So you want to be the gaffer on the sidelines, shouting orders, giving sessions. But you get into it. If your game model wants to come out a bit more, you got to understand now what you're doing for the players. So again, it's cliche, but there's a phrase I always use in terms of, for me to be able to coach the player at the back of the shirt, I've got to know the person that's wearing it. So yeah, I think that's hard to understand the psychological side of the sociological side of what a player is, what a person is first. And if I wanted to sort of now grow him as a person or grow her as a person, I had to understand them.
You know what's so interesting about it? I'm just thinking about it now. You're saying, like, you know, you started almost best part of 15 years ago now, right?
Yeah.
I'm coming into what is probably going to be my 17th year now, right? And even though there's like a short window between it, only 4 years difference, I'm looking at the point, like, I started before this Pep Guardiola kind of thing came in,
yeah,
right? And the mindset was just so different for coaches when I started. We weren't thinking about game model that. And I don't know, maybe I'm just generalizing, but we weren't thinking about it. We were just like, how can I put it? It wasn't about having a way of playing. It was just, right, how do we get players to become better?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? How do we develop players? And it was a very, very, very different time, I think, in coaching, especially in grassroots football at the time. I think one of the things that I say all the time is that for a lot of coaches that started around that generation, and maybe even before, so I started, 2009. And for a lot of the coaches that came through that kind of time, I think, one of the, like, academy football wasn't even an ambition. It wasn't even something on the table.
Yeah.
We were just coaching, like, every other day in, you know, grassroots football, working with Sunday league teams or whatever. There was no JPL. There was none of this, right?
Yeah.
I say to sometimes when I speak to younger coaches, like, they've probably got it too good right now when they start their journeys. And I feel like coaches from maybe my generation in particular, you know, I'm not sure if it what it was like for you, but, you know, even little things, having to go to a ground and put the nets up and all that type of stuff.
Yeah,
like, bro, it really shaped you as a coach. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, no, so I had that sort of journey. I think, again, so when I started, it was in and around, probably looking at it, it was like 2013 or 2012 was when I got my level one. And then even then, it was still putting up the coach. And I think that's what sort of makes you. And I think, especially when you're within grassroots coaching, as much as academy recruitment's bringing in players, with grassroots coaching, you're just bringing people in. You want more numbers. So I still even have that view. And whenever I see a player, it's like, how much can I stretch them? How much can I develop them? And it could be a short period of time. It could be over a couple of years. But there's no player that I don't feel even if it's a small moment that could help you. But I think, like you've mentioned, I've always discussed with other coaches, I don't genuinely feel like there's anything new you can do in coaching. I think it's just understanding how to keep the wheel spinning rather than inventing the wheel. So I think now, like what you've mentioned, there's probably things you still do now, but there's more resources, there's more research, there's more academic research on it as well. And they've now provided phrases, they provide words around it to understand what people probably done beforehand when they started coaching. And now people have a clearer understanding and can use certain buzzwords to obviously make it sound a bit different. But it's pretty much, for me, a lot of the same stuff, but it's all about refining that method, refining your methodology. And as everyone says, coaching is a lifelong process. So understanding along the way what can be better, what you're currently doing well, and obviously where you want to go to with it.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Like, obviously for me, as someone who probably operates more as a coach developer now than anything else, like, I talk about a lot, like, how do we shape behavior? How do we influence behavior? How do we create behavioral change in not just players, but coaches as well? And it's like, everything that you've kind of talked about there is just about being really reflective on your practice, right? And yeah, really understanding, like, what am I doing? But more importantly, why am I doing it?
Yeah.
And, you know, is this the best way to do it? So it's just really asking yourself constantly these questions, and, you know, just that high level of awareness and that element of, yeah, just reflective practice. So I guess, you know, what does that process look like for you? Because I'm quite big on the view that I don't think coaches, us as coaches and just as a population of coaches, we do that well enough.
I'm 100%. I think, and again, there's obviously research, and I'm currently doing a research paper in terms of coach development and coach education. But I think, looking back at my journey, like I said, I went into grassroots, going back and forth in Northampton. And when I came down now, I was all right, cool, graduated. Now I'm coaching. And that's when I done the level two. And again, it might be different from your time when you done it, but I done the new level two. So now you're looking at players.
I ain't that old, man.
Oh, my bad.
But yeah, no, I think it would have been, if you, so my one, did you do the one for the in-situs?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I done the one before that.
Oh, okay, fair. Yeah. I was right along the ways, but I think that's when you started to understand a bit more. But I always tell people the thing, and it's not the same journey that everyone needs to take, but I think the big thing, as much as we're doing my UEFA B, was my master's I'd done in sports coaching. And there was an element where we looked at contemporary approaches to player development. And I think what you mentioned was, there was an element there where we talked about coaching as a cognitive process and coaching as a sociological process. And I think when you look at the cognitive process, it's a barrage of different decisions you make, and it's all around shape around decision making and intentions or why you want to go to an agreed goal. But then when you're looking at a social side, it's understanding the sociological side of coaching, where you now put the ambiguity and the context and the sporting context that you're in. And I think, like what you mentioned, is understanding what side of the spectrum do you lean towards more. And I think a lot of it relies down to the environment and the context that you're in. So I think after I got my UEFA B, working in different Cat 1s, Cat 3 academies, I started to probably see it more of a cognitive process and looking at it more of where it's a decision-making process and understanding the nature of coaching, how universal it can be, but then still having that grassroots side of me and taking that sociological process of understanding the context of the skill of the coach and myself and my professional development along the way. So I think it's just understanding that, and it's how behavior can be shaped by certain contexts and how it can be shaped with how your behavior can be shaped by certain contexts, and looking at academy coaches and looking at how you have a syllabus and how you go about that sort of now shapes your process and your intentions. And that's some of my research has been looking into that in terms of that cognitive dishonest.
Let's look at that a little bit then. You know, what's your approach to coaching? How do you do it? Because I look back at my journey sometimes and I think, right, again, reflection, just to give some context. So I started, like I said, 2009. Very, very, very different landscape in terms of what was considered to be effective coaching.
Yeah.
At that time, the youth modules had just come out. So, like, I started coaching just as the youth modules were coming out. So, like, there was this, I often say that, you know, I count myself quite fortunate to have started when I did, because I came through what I believe to be a more informative process to coach education early on in my journey.
Yeah.
So you know, I did the old level one, I did the old level two before the in-situs and all that came into the pass and fail piece. I did the old B license. I think I was actually on the final B license of its kind in London. So I did that. It was like the last batch of that old B license, and I then soon after went on to do my A license. But my A license happened to end up being the first one they brought with the in-situs. So I was on the last of the old B license, and I was on the first of the A license. And I felt that for me personally, coming through that journey, I came into the A license with a very good grounding and understanding of like the technical side, which I think is still a key piece now. However, you know, you've spoken about it there a lot around the cognitive side, the sociological side, and how that's become more and more prevalent and I guess prominent at the forefront of coaches' minds and how to work with players. So like, you know, what's that approach been like for you? Because I started very early on and it was very much command, command, command. As time's gone on, it's become a bit more taking a little bit of a step back and letting the players having a little bit more time to explore. And I've got my own opinions on why that might be, but I'm interested to know from your perspective, what does good coaching look like for you, and how has that shifted for you over the years?
I think, like I've mentioned before, you've got to take in your coaching context. And I think depending on what level of the game, what phase you're currently working on, is what you're trying to get from the players. And like you mentioned beforehand, it was coach-centric in terms of command, coach in the middle, I'm telling you to do this because of this. Whereas I think it now started to grow and it started to get a more of a scope on understanding and allowing players to understand the why behind they're doing it. So I think that's when obviously now, from probably what was done beforehand, there was now more collective phrases. So we're looking at a constraint-based learning approach. And I look at a constraints-led approach in terms of looking at the task, looking at the environment, and looking at the individuals you're working with. And rather than myself going in the middle and telling them we're doing this or doing that, how can I shape practice design to get them intentions around that? So I think, again, it's something that I do heavily lean into, but I also look at differential learning as well, and providing that looks at that, providing a level of noise, a level of, I wouldn't say distraction, but a level of noise in terms of how can we still gear them how can we sort of gear them in a way and provide variability to our session and allowing them to understand, gain information to use in future approaches while providing that level of noise. So them two approaches, whether it is the constraints led or the differential learning, are ones that I do heavily lean on just due to my coaching environment that I currently work in. And I think that's understanding them that you still have elements of command. You still have it, but you're now leaning a bit more into trial and error, guided discovery, and allowing them to understand the why behind it, doing it, and picking up information from there. But then that, I guess now, as obviously I started to get into non-league, it's understanding, okay, it's a different environment, it's the 3-point game, pretty much depending where you're at. Obviously non-league, your job can be on the line. So now, as much as you want to learn and teach them and grow them as people and as individuals and as players, how can I now get 3 points as simple as that on the Saturday now? So it is obviously a bit of command, and it gives me that element of going into the academy and allowing the game to be the teacher. Now we're going to the non-league and now saying that, okay, this is what I want us to do. And if I get it wrong, then it's going to show on the table at the end of the day, to be fair.
So you believe in that phrase then, let the game be the teacher.
To a certain degree, I think the coaching context gets missed so much. And I think if you are if working with young players, whether it's an academy, whether it's in grassroots, you want to have that element of fun, because you look at long-term player athlete development, they may start off having fun from there, and they might go progressively throughout the spectrum, and they might get to the end of it in their adult life, and now they're still playing football even though they haven't made it. But that coach that provided that fun element to them probably was the one that allowed the game to be a teacher. Whereas now, if it's a non-league, it's like you might not like what I'm doing, and you always hear it. You have clashes because we're humans, we're complex individuals, so you might have different understandings, different approaches, and what it is. But success looks like a win or a loss or a draw, obviously, if it's a league format. So it's just a bit, but I do believe in allowing the game to be a teacher, but applying it to the certain context and what that you're working in.
It's interesting. I actually don't believe in it at all.
Oh, why is that for you then?
I don't think the game can be a teacher. I think the game is a platform that still requires a facilitator of learning attached to it. So I think if you're going to rely on, you know, it might be semantics at this stage, but I think in many respects, what I see a lot of now is coaches leading with that let the game be the teacher piece, but I don't think it's done in a constructive manner. I think in a lot of situations where coaches are saying let the game be the teacher, I begin to question, are you passing the responsibility over to the game because you don't have the capacity to teach the game? And not saying there's anything necessarily directly wrong with that, because it depends on your role as a coach, right?
Which is
another discussion on its own. Like, what is the role of a coach? But I certainly don't think the game can teach players. Ultimately, it's the reflective piece around it.
Yeah.
So if it isn't the coach, then the player must be doing the reflections on it. So, like, you know, you talked there about let the game be the teacher and giving them an opportunity to understand the game. Okay, but if I don't know where to look, how am I going to know what to look for?
And I think that's when you probably now look at that, like what we mentioned before, whether it's the sociological side or the cognitive side. And I look at this, it's something I picked up in my master's about the zone of proximal development.
Yeah.
And again, it's understanding what I can learn on my own, what I can learn with help, and what's beyond my
reach.
You don't know
what you don't know, right?
Exactly.
So
that.
Something has to be brought to your attention, and the game ain't shouting, hey, Francis, come and look at this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So that's why, again, mentioning the coaching context, if that's a... When I first started off and it was just doing the community sessions, it was just like, put a session on, let them play football at the end of the day. But, you know, young players are going to be asked, when are we going to get into a match? Now, when you get a book more and you understand it a bit more from a cognitive side, it's like, okay, what can the players learn on their own and let the game be the teacher? And what I could potentially help with them, and what's beyond their reach in the terms of now I'm actually coaching a session and trying to stretch you as a player.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one, because again, I'm fascinated by coaches, how coaches learn, how coaches develop. And obviously that's kind of why I've fallen into the space and become obsessed with the idea of coach development, right? But one of the things I often question is, if we don't know what we don't know, are we capping the players to our knowledge base?
100%. I think in that sense, I think, yeah. And that's when you have to understand that, because you always see it, and there's no disrespect to any coaches, when a player makes it, it was like, I coached that player. But you might have been a small little ripple effect in that player, whereas another coach probably taken beyond. And I think that's when you have to give credit where credit's due. A lot of it is a phrase, it's an older phrase, and my mum used it quite a bit. It takes a village to bring up a person.
Yeah, yeah. 100%.
And it might not have been you within there. And you might have been there from a period of time from 5 years, for instance, but it could have been that coach in the 12 months months.
It's a really interesting point, because, I can often be considered provocative, right?
to say the least, isn't it?
The question that I often challenge coaches to think about now, and not in a malicious way, but in just a really provocative and around a reflective piece, right, is how do you know what you're doing is working?
And I think you probably have to look at the reflective practice. But then that comes now to your individual framework, and it's that reflective practice within your individual framework. So you obviously have your learning and how you might learn. And again, looking at, if you want to look at from academic perspective, you look at professional development, it could be your formal, non-formal and informal learning. Again, looking at, like I said, these are stuff that's been said before, whereas when I've been on courses, they might use the 7-20-10 rule. And I think that's when you sort of now start to pitch yourself, how much are you learning from yourself and everything, so you're always pushing for courses.
Yeah, but how do you know what you're doing as a coach with your players is working?
Coaching context, if I'm on the 3-point and I'm on league 3 points, then obviously I'm going to take that and run with it. Whereas when you're looking at development style, when you're looking at sort of like the more of a wider picture, you could see if they're applying elements. You look at learning, and obviously working at sometimes my teaching background as well. You might come back to something 6 weeks later and see what they've picked up. What can they now say? What can they now say without my aid? What about my support? And what have they picked up from it?
This is the point, though. How do you know that's come from you?
It takes, like I mentioned before, it does take a village, obviously, to bring up a person. So, again, everyone likes
to sort of take. So it's possible that you're out there just taking credit for other people's work.
100%. I think that's an element of that will happen, but whether you want to attribute to just yourself, and when you attribute to that, like I mentioned before, we're complex individuals. You might now not hit that athlete or that player or even that learner in my teaching aspect in terms of you didn't hit that learning style that sort of stretched them, whereas someone else now could have done it and made it in simplistic terms. 100%. I think you just got to understand the part you play.
Yeah, no, you're 100% spot on. And I think, you know, just I think take it away from the side. I've got an analogy that I often use, and it's that, look, ultimately, if we look at all the individuals that we work with or that come into our environment, so and if we look at them as if they are a lock.
Yeah.
Me and you might be working in the same environment together, but we don't have the keys for every lock in that environment.
Yeah.
You might have 10 keys, I might have 10 keys, but we've got 18 players in that environment. So we've got 18 locks, but we've got 20 keys between us. But some of those 20 keys might unlock the same lock.
Yeah.
Right. So I think this is where the beauty of coaching comes in. It's like, I always say there's no one right way other than the way that works for the individual that you're working with.
100%, yeah.
Right. So it could be that we've got two different approaches. It could be the way that we connect with the individual. It might not even be how we coach necessarily. It might just be the personal aspect of who we are as individuals, which connects with the individual and, you know, maybe has an empathy for the person and where they're coming from and the experiences that they've had, if you like, which then allows us to kind of tap into that, open that lock, so to speak. And I always find it fascinating that, you know, how coaches, you know, and I throw myself into this as well, how we just firmly believe, no, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so this is the way it is, but there's still so many people that don't do it this way and still have quote-unquote success in developing players.
And I think that's when you sort of look at now your professional development as a coach. And like I've mentioned before, when I talk at how I've gone about with learning, because obviously when you look at academic research, they talk about there's a lack of definitional clarity in what is the professional development. And you look at research, and a lot of professional development is split in between coach education and sports psychology. And I think when you now understand to start to build your own individual framework, you begin to now sort of put more emphasis on how you're developing as a person, and whether it is coach learning, whether it is coach education, whether it is coach training, but ultimately all CPDs, you're ultimately sort of now building your repertoire, and it's a coaching is a lifelong process rather than
if like you're intentional about it.
100%, and that's where we talked about looking at it more as a cognitive view. And I think you get to a certain level where you have to now look at it as a decision making process and being a bit more intentional with your actions.
100%. And again, like, you know, you'll know that I'm doing my doctorate at the moment, and one of the pieces I'm exploring is like what really works in coaching, what really works in coach learning and development. Like, and it's so interesting because, you know, we've gone from a world of everything was face to face to now everything's online to now everything's blended. Like you got a bit in person, a bit online. And it's like the question I'm wrestling with at the moment is, well, who decides what it should look like?
Yeah.
Like, surely if it's about learning and development, then the coach who's receiving the information should be the one driving that. Now, obviously, that becomes a logistical nightmare to try and manage. But ultimately, I think, you know, one of the things I'm fascinated by is, well, how do we get coaches become more intentional about their learning and development? Because ultimately, look, we can accept and appreciate that everyone needs to continue developing to get better.
Yeah.
Right? There needs to be an element of reflection in there. There needs to be an element of, intentionality around engagement and participation in development opportunities, whether that be a course, a CPD session, a workshop, or whatever it might be. Even just having these conversations that we're having now, right? I say all the time, like, you know, I've probably got over like 350 odd episodes on this podcast, and it's probably been the best CPD that I could have ever imagined, because I'm just sitting here having conversations with coaches and coach developers or anyone linked to athlete and player development around, well, how do we get better at this stuff? What do you do? And what about, you know, what can I take from you? And like, I come into this process as a very intentional, if you like, student to learn more about different approaches and maybe in some ways, to clarify, well, what's further clarified for me around how I work? What's challenging my thinking around, actually, have I got this right or have I got this wrong? And, you know, that's like my intention in going into every conversation is, what can I learn from this? Whereas, and I guess the irony of it is, no one accredits me for this element of my development. Do you know what I mean?
And I think like what you mentioned, I sort of like mentioned it in brief about that. It's an old model, but again, it's one that stuck with me, especially when I was doing my master's about, it's from Coops and Ahmed and from years back, 1974, about, like I mentioned, formal, informal and non-formal learning. And you look at formal, where I've been there and I'm guilty of it as well. When it's like, you want to get on courses and everyone talks, that's, you're probably just going to learn 10% of your whole coaching repertoire from courses. And then you look at non-formal, and that could potentially be seminars, CPDs that you currently go to. But the big thing where the 70% hit really sort of hits and where you get your real learning from is that informal learning. And that's like what you're saying, having conversations, having, whether it's a mentor, having, being on the grass and actually coaching and understanding. Because, like, again, you probably know as well as myself, where you've left the session, planned it to a T, and then like, oh god damn, like what that was a car crash. And you sort of realize, you're like, cool, now you start putting other elements, whether you do hot reflection, cold reflection, and have a sort of approach to a reflective practice, you start building up there. And I think that's when you're going to really know more about your coaching process more than anything. And I think I heavily rely on that individual framework and that sort of process of when it comes to learning.
So to talk to that a little bit, then, you know, you mentioned there about, you know, the 70% being the informal. What, you know, if you think back on your journey, can you think of, you know, maybe two or three moments where you feel like that was a really influential part and just shaped how you view coaching, and, you know, this was had a big impact on your practice?
Yeah, no, obviously you mentioned two or three. I don't want to keep you too long, but I can do definitely in the high hundreds. But in terms of it, like, I look at back when I'd done my level two, it was, all right, cool, want to get in my UA for B, and I was guilty of going from course to course to course. But within that time, I've like, there was a gap that you're going to have in between courses. And if they do that as well to supplement the learning and understand, okay, what are you picking up from it? So within that time, I thought, okay, I want to get my UA for B. To do that, or to in and around that, what makes a UA for B coach? And some of the majority of them that get that, and they probably want to work in academy. So from there, done a lot of visits in different academies, whether it was a Cat 1, Cat 2, and Cat 3, and I've been fortunate for the people that I've met in this coaching world that they open their doors to more in there. I know now when you go in there, you're starting to understand what they're doing there, how can I probably apply it to my coaching context at the time. Also, if I was there, because as we're all guilty of, when you see someone coach, you're right, I probably would have done this, I probably would have done that. And then now you're going back to your coaching context and you probably try to apply it. So within that time, I was going on courses, going on conferences, doing that non-formal learning. But the informal learning was going to speak it to other coaches and having a bit more intentional conversations about the why behind it, doing it, and understanding that cognitive process and that sort of set of decision making that they do. So done that, a big sort of turning point as well when I done county football. So I was fortunate to do the London County football at the time. Again, that was my time with London FA. And that was almost like a national camp, or a camp where we have 2 weeks to prepare for a game where we're going to play, so representing London FA, where we're playing Middlesex FA, AFA. And I don't have no time to now teach or coach these the players about what.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My philosophy, it was, how can I get players understanding the way of a way of understanding and coaching and playing that can now be geared towards results? Because you are in a league, you are trying to progress into the knockout stage and ultimately win, obviously, the county football element that was there. So that was a big thing, and understanding how now I can drip feed sort of what I might call, quote unquote, my philosophy on football, and how I'd like to see the game played, should I say. Because like we mentioned before, they might do it for the sake of just doing it, but am I really helping that player in that moment, or am I really just trying to get a result?
It's interesting because what I'm hearing as you speak is essentially that experience taught you about the importance of being able to strip back the message.
100%. I think you got to realize, understanding like how you can affect a player in small chunks. And if you have a period of time where you work with them, how you now might build it. And obviously there's stuff around tactical periodization, and that looks at obviously the condition of the player, but then also your tactical side of it, how you can still build on your tactical understanding and tactical game model and help him alongside the way. So there's stuff that in that moment I had to learn how to strip it and how to sort of drip feed it and how to give it a bite-sized chance and almost let the players use that pitch as a canvas and allow them to paint their own picture. But then when I went back to my own coaching context, I had a bit more time, I had a bit more sessions with them, had more games, and where, again, in youth development, where you're not looking at the be-all, end-all with winning, but it was almost all right, could we applied that to the session, or we done this session and I saw the results six weeks from after it, and it's like, oh, you picked up creating the attack to finish and you picked up that element of it and then we applied it 6 weeks and you start understanding, okay, cool, that process is a lifelong process, and you're even when it looks at player development, they might not get it there and then, but later on, how does that sort of like portray itself and not looking at results, but looking at more about what they're picking up and everything around that.
So just look, you know, on that then, like, I'm just thinking, like, you know, you've put together a plan, right? How do you decide? Like, I'm interested to know your processes. Like, how do you decide how long to spend on something then?
Again, sort of in terms of when I look at it, I think, so there was a big time where one of the coaches, now he's currently a head of coaching at Cat 2 Academy, allowed me to come into the academy and see how they process and how they worked it. They build their game model and their coaching syllabus on thirds of the game. So every 2 weeks, and that really stuck with me because every 2 weeks they'll stay on a third of the game in terms of still whole picture, but we're looking at the defensive third, for instance, and the first that could be potentially playing out the back. The next week we flip that model and that can now be defending on a low block. So when I was out in my own coaching context, which was grassroots at the time, I applied that. So every 2 weeks we'll do that. And we started to build that. Then the middle third would have been building attacks from midfield, and the other one might be sitting in the mid block and understand how we defend them. The center of the pitch will defend wide areas and vice versa in terms of creating and finishing in the final third and high pressing in the final third. And that really stuck with me because then it wasn't a thing where I'm looking at the game and I'm thinking, all right, we probably lost because we couldn't defend. But on that coaching methodology I'm using, all right, we couldn't defend, we couldn't press a high effectively, but we're still in that middle third. So rather than sort of doing that, I might now speak to players in terms of individually what we probably want in the and sort of when we are pressing high, but then still stick to that syllabus and build it up. So that was a big thing in terms of like looking at that informal learning, what we spoke about, where it was outside courses, outside CPDs, and applying stuff to that I could use obviously later on. But then, as mentioned before, that all changed now when I got into academy football. So I got my UEFA B. I was thankful to obviously, again, to looking at the people that I've been able fortunate about. I was thankful to get in the FA placement. And that was a big moment because that gave me now an insight into what academy football and being really in the thick of things. And that's when I started to understand more about how working alongside the syllabus, now sort of having that autonomy to still build sessions, but I've got to build it in terms of what the club wants and what the club believes in is the right approach in developing players.
And what's your, you know, what challenges have you found with that? Do you ever find at times that it conflicts with your own views, your own thoughts, and your own beliefs around what it should look like?
So then, again, that's what I've sort of briefly mentioned. But if I go in a bit more detail, that's what the research article that we're currently trying to get published is looking at, and looking at that cognitive dissonance in terms of what you believe is right and what needs to be done. And we're looking at in terms of we use Goffman's model. So he looked at in terms of front stage and backstage, where the front stage is the social politics that you look at, and so the face that you have to, the mask you have to put on. And that could be working in an academy. And like you're saying, having that confliction between what they want you to do and what you probably believe is right. And that's when it probably comes more in your backstage. And that could be in conversations with other coaches, conversation and even with family members, and how coaches and how that might shape coaching behavior. So I give it is then, I think, and now looking at it, and when we looked at it, as much as we looked at a small sample of coaches, when we looked at sort of further directions and future recommendations, we could be looking at more coaches around that and understanding. One of the things we picked at is that the coaches that felt like the academy syllabus and academy philosophy suited more didn't have that much conflictions, whereas the ones that did, it sort of affected now their behaviours and how they speak to the players and how they probably plan sessions, and looking at it long-term and sort of that sort of like conflictions around that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because what I'm really hearing is anyone that wants to work in academy football, you better just follow the plan.
But I think you build up a skill set. I think that's what I talked about, looking at it is you move now from a sociological process and look at intentional. And it's not to say that when you are in an interview, when you are sort of applying for a job, really understand what you're being asked for, really understand on what the club's asking, how they believe there's best way to develop coaches, because you might want to get into a academy because you've got your A for B and you probably want to potentially do the AYA or the A license, and now you're in an academy that you just don't believe in their philosophy. So are you doing that just to get on courses to say, I'm an A licensed coach, or are you doing it because you actually do want to make a difference in these players' lives?
Yeah, okay. I guess there's two elements to that, right? It's like you've got to understand that as a coach, you're on your personal journey, but as a club, they're hiring you to do a role which is support the development of their players in a way that they want them developed. And, you know, I remember, you know, being part of a conversation where, you know, a head of coaching, a technical director for the academy, I remember saying to one of the coaches, I'm not interested in what you want. You know what I mean? I'm bringing you in to do what we want. And you know, his motto was what he called FIFO, fit in or F off.
Oh, right.
Right. And the thing is, and I mentioned that to basically highlight the fact that, you know, coaches have to be considerate of the fact that you're going into someone else's environment. It's not your environment, and you might have ideas and you might want to try things out. And yes, there should be an element of autonomy to be able to do those things, but you're also representing an organization trying to develop players in a particular way for a specific reason, right? And obviously that's, you know, that's subjective and individual to the club or the organization that you work for. And I think, you know, I say that to say, if you are, you know, like yourself, looking to embark on a journey in academy football, that space, not every opportunity is going to be the right one for you.
100%. And I think you obviously mentioned something key, because you're looking at whether it is the academy manager, directors or head of coaching, you're looking at how they've measured success over the years. And we could talk about stuff about deliberate practice and doing the 10,000 hours of ensuring that you're in a position. But that doesn't, when you look at the statistics, it's 0.01 or something similar in terms of players that make it, that started at 9 years old, that make it into academy. Mm. So for them, if they've now made, they've created and developed players that could potentially fit in that percentage. That bracket.
Yeah,
and it's for them. Well, they obviously feel justified.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point. But this is go back to my question earlier. That, you know, well, that I've started asking coaches, well, how do you know it really works? How do you know what you're doing works? Because ultimately, I have, you know, I'm leaning more to and not in a pessimistic way, but I'm leaning more, you know, more and more I spend around coach education and coaching and observing players. And I think I'm actually moving closer to a point where I'm thinking, I don't know if any of this coaching is actually making a difference.
And we always all highlight the players that do make it, but how many of them players that don't make it, do they get now conversation after the fact that they don't get the pro, or they sort of now fall back
from it's football? Not even that. Like I'm looking at it from a viewpoint of, well, let's say as an example, the goal in this process within England is to produce many players that play in the Premier League as an example. Yeah. Or in professional football, shall we say. If you took us out of the equation, i.e. the coaches, I'm sure we're still going to have players coming through.
Are you saying that in an elite level? Because I think you've got...
We're still going to have players coming through, right? Because I'll be honest with you, like, when I hear people say, oh yeah, I coach this player or that player, I look at... let's take someone who's in the spotlight at the moment, Jude Bellingham.
Yeah.
There ain't a thing you're going to show me or say to me that's going to convince me someone made Jude Bellingham. Jude Bellingham was going to be Jude Bellingham.
Yeah.
All he needed to do is be shown a football pitch and understand that that's what he wanted to do. That's now, you could argue and say, yeah, but maybe it was a coach that helped him understand that. Cool. But I could argue and say, well, I'm not sure it was.
And I think that's when you sort of now... that spectrum you spoke about, the sociological process. I mean, you're taking in a context. I think there's one when you're speaking of that, what could quote that sort of like a story that came to my mind, it was about Iniesta, and when Johan Cruyff came and he saw Iniesta playing in the youth team, and he said with Iniesta, he just needs an environment. And I think like what you've mentioned, sometimes some players just need an environment. They just need that autonomy to actually express yourself. And and again, looking at another side, another story, when Alex Ferguson spoke about how he coached Ronaldo was completely different from how he probably coached Ji-Seon Park, for instance. And some players, like what you're mentioning, they probably just need that environment. They probably need information drip-feeded to them, rather than another player that's probably made it through hard work and perseverance.
So the question is then, Francis, what works?
And I think that's like if you mentioned this, I think you got to really look at like how you measure success. And I think in life, and how you measure success. So, for instance, now if you apply it to football, you look at high pressing. I'll ask you a question. You probably will probably spin that question back to me. But what pressing high? How are we going to measure success in terms of what's successful in pressing high?
So for me, it's about how long can we extend the opposition's attack. So for me, generally speaking, defending isn't about necessarily winning the ball back. It's about stopping the opposition scoring. Right? Yeah. I'm not bothered if you've got the ball. But obviously, in context of the game, plays a part in that, right?
Yeah.
On a general level, the goal of me defending is not to get the ball back. The goal of me defending is to ensure that you can't score.
And I think you've answered that quite well. So my next question would have mentioned, so we've gone to press high now, the ball goes out for a throw and comes off our team. But is there a throw still? Is that success to you?
Yeah.
And then I think that's what you got to look at. And I think with football, I think football is such a beautiful, one of the beautiful sports that so many different situations can arise and it's not black and white. There's so much in the gray that within there. So like we've mentioned, it could be slow in their attack. They could still play a pass forward, but is that the pass they want intended to play?
So then the question is now, is are we then all stealing a living by coaching?
I wouldn't say necessarily stealing a living. I think we're looking at a barrage of different opinions.
All right.
And ultimately, again, looking at...
I'm not saying that I believe we are, but I'm just throwing the question.
No, I know. I think looking at the three-point game, you might say, yeah, I'm writing this because we're getting 3 points every week. At the end of the season, we're title winners. But it could be measuring success could be, oh, well, mid-table team and we pushed above our weight. Measuring success could be working with a younger player. Like I talk about that grassroots, me being a grassroots coach at heart.
Okay. So let's explore that one a little bit further. It's a 3-point game. Your goal is to win games. You've gone out and said, right, this is the way that I want my team to play. Your player makes a decision that goes against that, but gets success in it. Who takes the credit?
I think if you win, it's the players. If you lose, it's the coach. So I think, yeah.
So now, again, Is the coach who making a difference? If the player then makes a decision on his own accord to do something, again, I'm just playing devil's advocate, by the way. I'm not saying he is or isn't, right? I don't want to diminish the whole industry of coaching, but if the player makes his own independent decision to do something that might go against what you've encouraged or outlined for them to do, how can you take credit for that? I'm not saying that you would personally. But some coaches were like, yeah, that was fantastic. But yeah, but that was against what you said you wanted them to do. So now, again, just again, playing devil's advocate. Does coaching really work?
I think I've been looking at it as a whole. I believe football goes in cycles. And if you're looking at coaching, it's with you, it goes in cycles. So like you mentioned, when you've done your courses before, it was command, co-centric, I'm right, you need to do this. This is how we get success. Then it moved in more allowing, like you said, that phrase, letting the game be the teacher and allowing autonomy into football. And I think now we sort of went back now and you're looking at coaches in terms of trying to control all aspects of play, so whether it's attacking, defending and the transition moments and now even set pieces. I mean, you're looking at more emphasis and sort of maximising the time when the ball's out of play and we're getting it back in. And I think now when you're looking at it, it's like, is coaching working and is it mainly, are you giving players freedom or are you trying to control all aspects of it? And I think that's when you sort of now, so you start to understanding a bit more about what is your philosophy, what your players want to symbolize in terms of your coaching methodology. If it's a more free, more autonomous sort of approach, you probably now have your players making different decisions around it, and it's almost like that's what they want to do. And one sort of another phrase, again, like you're picking up all these phrases that I've had along my way, is actually allowing the pitch is the canvas. And the players are the artists. And I always strongly believe in terms of if that picture wants to be painted, you just got to give the paintbrushes, the paint to the players and allow them to paint the picture. And whatever picture that comes up, it's probably not, it might not be the picture you had in mind, but how you measure success in terms of how you want it to look like, does it make sense to the players? And I think that's when now we look at the long-term athlete development model and whether it's within the season, whether it's over a period of time. How that comes across and what do you sort of drip feed. So when they're now painting that picture, it makes sense to the collective that you're working with rather than to the outsiders.
Now, interesting. I'm gonna shift this slightly now. I'm gonna focus on you for a second now. What's your biggest challenge currently in coaching?
My biggest challenge in coaching, I think it's looking at what a game model looks like and how sort of now implement it. And I think, like I said, I'm split between academy coaching and non-league coaching. I actually love the confliction. I love, in terms of on a Saturday, I'm looking at the people that I work with there and how they go about getting three points. And I look at my academy role now and sort of how now we look to develop players. And I think my biggest challenge within that is, one side, we want to have a hands-on approach, and the other side, we sort of just want to build an environment that allow players to grow. So, yeah, no, it's just looking at the times are there. And I think also looking at the professional development, like I mentioned, there's obviously a bit of a lack of clarity, should I say, in what is coach development. And I think now understanding in terms of what my coach development looks like and how I sort of expand out my individual framework, and then how I have obviously my own sort of ambitions and where I want to be, where I feel like I want to be coaching later on in the future.
Just thinking about that coach development piece. Again, I'm speaking to a lot of coaches at the moment, trying to identify what they found useful, what they found effective. What's been from your experiences, what's really helped you in your own coach development? And like, what was it, you know, what was it specifically about that interaction or that method of, interaction or intervention, if you like, that supported? Like, what was it about? Like, you know, it's one of the things I talk about a lot. For me, I can't think of any one particular course or workshop or CPD. It was more actually what's really helped me is being effective at reflecting on what's just been discussed or shared. Like, what works for you?
For me, I like being challenged. So I think, okay, like what we're having this conversation where it is, you're asking me questions, and if I wasn't, and it's not a thing where I'm securing myself, I'm going to say this is right, but it's getting you thinking, it's getting you understanding, it's getting you to understand the why behind your saying things. Are you just saying things because it sounded nice from an elite manager that's working in an elite environment? Are you saying it because you truly believe this is what it is? And I know we've had a discussion, how do you know it works? But how do you know if it works? How do you know if you're not stripping it back and understanding it? And if you can now sort of understand your process a bit more, I think that's what it's at. So for me, that works the most. Like what you mentioned, there's no one specific course. My master's was a great one because it looked at a wide range of things. And some things stuck, some things didn't. And something, in terms of when I say it didn't, it's not that I didn't like it, but it's not something that I look at now in terms of that's the sort of area of expertise or specialism that I want to go into. Mm. But it was just some things I was drawn more closer to it. So when I look at it, it's like a lot of stuff was around that informal learning, whether I just went in there and observing and understand what that coach is doing, or whether I had conversations with another coach and it was critiquing me, or they were just giving me, again, I'm quite hard on myself. So sometimes when I do get certain flowers from other people, I'm just like, okay, that's good, but what did I do wrong? And I think that's when I sort of really get into it. And it's not saying that I want you to downgrade me, but it's all berate me for what happened. But it's like, I want to see what from your coaching lens, what you probably could have done. And if it makes sense to me, apply it.
Yeah.
If not, then...
So on that, then, you know, it was something you mentioned about you like to be challenged, you like, you know, I guess effectively being put into a position of reflection, if you like, right? Is anything in this conversation that's challenged your thinking?
100%. I think, again, looking at my time is looking at more around the theoretical side and the academic side. There's numerous research around, like, as coaches, we have a lack of self-awareness. And I think now this conversation as a whole can provide that awareness on it. And it's like, have I got an understanding of what or why I'm saying what I'm saying? And I think we just have to look at it. And it's almost like, what's this conversation allow me to have awareness on, and going back to the drawing board, and not saying, next time I talk to Yaz, I'm really ready for that question. But it's next time I speak to another coach, I just understand, I'm more clearer on the why. And I'm talking about that lifelong process. You might never be completely bang on the why of why you do this, but bit by bit, you sort of get, you're gaining a picture of around why we're doing certain things.
And I think that's spot on. And I think that's all you can do, right? You can just go back to the drawing board, reflect on what you're doing, see what's going well, see how you can refine it. Don't just think because some things are going well that they're going to continue going well. Actually look at how you develop those things as well. And I think, you know, I talk about it all the time, like we need to be consistently improving and not 100%. Neglect, inconsistently improving. It's not just improving the areas that we think aren't going well, but it's actually reinforcing the areas that are, because it's very easily done where you can kind of just then focus on your weaknesses, so to speak, of the whatever the interaction of the practice is. But you then fall into a trap of not reinforcing what's actually going really well that got it to that point in the first place. So I think there's so much in, you know, in what you've shared so far. And I guess, you know, for coaches listening to this, I would hope that there's, you know, there's some bits there that's just got them thinking, and, you know, maybe get them reflecting on, right, actually, do I know my why? Do I know why I do the things the way I do them? Like, you know, and if you don't, like you said, you don't need to have the answer all the time, but are you thinking about it at least?
Are you building up on it? Are you, like, there's nothing to say, you know what, like what we mentioned, I'm going to strip that back. I'm actually going to take that from my coaching repertoire and say, you know what, that I've now been questioning it and I don't really understand it. So now you've stripped it back and now you sort of want to sort of build that picture around understanding how that you can push yourself and develop yourself as a coach. Because ultimately, if you're developing yourself as a coach, you can always develop the players that you're working with. Mm. And from then, if you never strip it back, you could say it's been tried and tested and it works. But
I guess ultimately, they're the end user, right?
100%, yeah.
They're the ones who are going to, you know, if they are going to benefit of any coaching and any coaching that you're doing, it's going to be the players.
100%. The game evolves. And like I said, it might evolve back to a time that we've seen before. It might evolve in the time, but it evolves and it always adapts. There's going to be new regulations, new rules that will make you think outside the box. I think, like I said, when I was watching football a couple of years back, which is when before Pep Guardiola times, playing at the back, centre-backs had to stand outside the box. Now they put them in the box, the game changed, and how now might you change your approach? So there might be different rules and regulations. And I think that really sort of defines about how you have to change your approach, because now if there's a different rule in terms of, all right, cool, we have kick-ons for throw-ons, how might now you picture your restarts? How might you now set up your in-possession, out-possession shapes and everything around that? And now how can you drip feed into the players to make and understand what could work, what might work, and what you could obviously pick up from yourself. So you just always got to adapt to yourself and understand as the game evolves, you had to evolve. Because I don't want to use the word fear, because that's such a negative undertone to it, but it's being stuck. And that's why I said I like to be challenged, because it either moves me or it gets me thinking. It won't allow me to stay still, because it's like, why am I being questioned on this? And then understanding the why am I being questioned? And obviously, how can I sort of articulate in a way that makes sense to me? And then passing it on to yourself. I think I look back at some informal conversations where I had the coach mentors. And I always ask coaches when they talk about, oh, this coach is brilliant, that I'd be like, what makes them that brilliant? And I remember one that stuck with me was that one of the coaches they spoke about, I think he was a head coach in an academy, and obviously he's moved on, was that no matter who he's speaking to, he can always make his point very clear. And I think looking at that, and it's like, that stuck with me, because it's like, if I can speak to you, who in the position of yourself, and I can make sense. Can I strip feed that and sort of strip it back and speak to a player that's coming and he's 9 years old and explain to him what football might mean, what football might mean to myself, and what football can obviously, what might that meaning help him alongside the way, or her alongside the way as well. So it's just understanding that and how you go about that approach.
I think it's spot on. I think it is just getting a deeper understanding of what you are trying to get across, so that you can get to a point of simplification. And I always say that my best advice to coaches is, whatever you coach it as if you can coach it to a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Strip it right back, because we're the ones, and I say we as coaches, like, we're the ones who complicate things. It's not the players.
No, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
So let's strip it back. Let's forget about all this language of whatever it is. Just keep it simple. Right, go back to the simplistic basics of what it is that you're trying to say. Like, I often say, like, if you're trying to share a message to a player or a team or whatever, if it's not always possible, but if you can work in a way where you're able to explain that in a sentence, you're probably on the right track.
Yeah, I mean, we had a discussion about coach interventions, and we could go in there and we can hit all the buzzwords that need to be said that we've heard on the courses, but they might look at you in a clueless look and be like, what do you mean by that? So, but could we go in there, speak for 30 to 45 seconds, hit what we need to speak, and actually make it understandable to them? And that's when the complexity comes into it, because do you need to speak to them? Do you need to show it to them? Do they need to understand? Do they need to read it in terms of tactical analysis and think, okay, this is what you were talking about later on? and then how you measure success, whether it happens and changes in the session, because they want to impress you, or do they now apply it into the game and you're sitting back and you're watching them play for another team now. You're thinking, oh, okay, that's what's happening there. Okay, do you picked up that message? But I look back and I think your question was very inquisitive in terms of how do we know it works? And it's like, how might we ever know? We might never know until.
But this is it. Are we just trying until no end? You know what I mean?
As long as the game evolves, you have to evolve. So I think there's some element to it, but then there's also some, like I've mentioned, some element to understand why you're doing it. Are you just doing it to keep up with trends and to be that.
I think the takeaway from that, you know, if I'm not playing devil's advocate, not trying to be provocative in any way, I think the takeaway is just be clear on what it is you're doing, why you're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be you know, make sure that you're firm in your understanding of your approach is more than anything. I guess, you know, I'm conscious of time as well. So I guess the question I want to ask you to kind of leave you with is, you know, for anyone listening to this, what would be your message to them around how to become more effective as a coach?
I think that last bit, what I mentioned before, is having that growth mindset. And I think having a sort of open mind in terms of how you go about being critiqued, how you go about being challenged, how you go about developing yourself. And I think if you're looking at your coaching practice, you're looking at, as you get along, it probably becoming a cognitive process in terms of, this is why I'm doing it, this is why I'm going about it. But it's not to say you need to have all the answers now. Like I've sort of been sort of preaching about it, it's a lifelong process. You might never have all the answers, but bit by bit, understanding why you're doing certain things, because we always get questioned from players, why are we doing it? And what you don't want to look like is like, oh, I'm just doing it because I saw it online. I'm just doing it because I saw another coach and doing it. You want to be able to give them that information in that moment to justify what you're doing it. So having that growth mindset to be able to adapt, change, develop, but being also understandable and strong in what you're saying.
I think it's so key, and I think it's a really good point, because, like, I'll be honest with you, like, there's certain players out there, and I definitely would have been one of them, right? if you're asking me to do something, I need to know why.
Yeah.
And if you can't help me understand the why, I'm probably not going to do it. I'm not because I'm trying to be difficult. I'm just, if I can't understand why we're doing this, I'm not going to put my energy into it. And you're going to get players like that.
Yeah.
Because I'm the type of person, like I said, like, I need to know why I'm doing it this way. Now, I don't need to know why every time, because you might have explained things to me a couple times over where I'm now just kind of following your lead, because actually you've given me enough clarity and understanding to almost give me the opportunity to give you credibility around what you're doing.
Yeah.
So now I start to trust your view a little bit more. But there's that part of it. That's just one dynamic. The other dynamic is I need to understand it so I can process how to do it in my lens, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think, like, so as you said, that something came to mind. I don't know, like you mentioned, conscious of time, but there's a thing where, and that picked up on one of the things, conversations that I had on a course, funny enough, but it was tell me I forget, show me I remember, and involve me, I understand. And I think you can only get that involvement if you know what you're doing. And if you 100%. Don't know what you're doing, if you don't have that trial and error within your coaching journey. So I think it's also always have that mindset on being looking at evolution rather than sort of being evolution rather than revolution. So rather than thinking I'm going to change everything, how might I evolve, as obviously the wheel keeps spinning, because it's going to continue spinning. The landscape's going to continue to move. Can you keep your vehicle moving alongside it? Or are you going to sort of break down and understand this is why I lay my head and this is where I'm going to stop at? And if so, sometimes you can obviously be suspect to being left behind. And
I think it's a great point. You know, I think the idea that, you know, we can continue evolving is the main thing here, right? In that none of us are ever going to crack this thing.
No.
And I don't know if any of us will ever be able to establish whether it works.
But I think that, like you mentioned, there's theoretical research around it. There's practicality in people that's on the grass and actually doing it. But now looking at that approach as a whole, it's understanding the process a bit more clearer, as obviously it gets muddied along the way and everything as such. But it's managing yourself throughout the storm, managing yourself throughout all the rain and everything as such, and sort of still finding that light at the end of it and understanding, okay, I'm going to keep on going. I'm going to keep on evolving. I'm going to go obviously understand, like what you mentioned, the why behind we do everything and not being afraid to strip it back. Because if it now begins to not work in that period of time, can I still have that mindset and saying, all right, cool, how can I now adapt it and obviously change from there?
I think it's spot on. Francis, man, it's been a pleasure, bro.
No, I'm more than happy.
We definitely need to do this again sometime, man. I really enjoyed it.
No, I think, again, obviously, like we always have our conversations. I'm always grateful for when we do have them conversations. So, yeah, I'm more than happy to play a part and obviously have a voice. And I'm obviously thankful for yourself to providing that. So more to you and more to obviously other conversations that we do have in the future.
Most definitely, man. I appreciate your time, bro.
No worries. Take care.
There you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.